At the top of our program last week, a group comprised mostly of high school and middle school students rallied at the Michigan Capitol after marching from Detroit to Lansing on foot. They hoped to raise awareness about the state's school discipline policies, asking lawmakers to eliminate zero-tolerance discipline policies in schools. While the intention of zero-tolerance policies is to promote school safety, many researchers and advocates argue that it's not effective and harmful for students. A draft model policy that's under review by the State Board of Education recommends schools move away from zero-tolerance policies. The board will likely vote on the draft next month. Perry Stone Palmquist is the executive director of the Student Advocacy Center of Michigan. The organization offers free, non-legal support for students impacted by school discipline and zero tolerance. He joins us now to discuss the future of discipline policies in Michigan schools. Perry, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What disciplinary actions does the zero tolerance policy in Michigan currently mandate?
What does it mandate? It mandates expulsion for bringing a weapon to school, and that's defined pretty broadly. So I've had students who have brought a knife to school to cut an apple. They use it to cut an apple, and they were suspended for the whole year. Mm. So this is part of the problem.
How does Michigan's law compare to other states? Are we noticeably stricter on this score?
We are. Yeah, we are. Actually, a lot of states have been revising their codes. Colorado, California, a few other states. But we mandate and allow expulsion for more reasons than other states. We don't have an appeal process. We don't require an education after you're expelled. You can be expelled and never have a right to an education again.
What was the intent when the zero tolerance law was initially put into place?
You're probably asking the wrong person, but I'm sure the hope still, all of us have the same hope that we have safe schools. So I think as some of the incidents like Columbine and things like that happened, there was a sincere effort to try to make our schools safer, but it's just that it doesn't make our schools safer and certainly doesn't make our communities safer to have kids out of school.
And that's been borne out in various studies of this?
Yep, in various studies, and certainly we just see it every day. We see how harmful this is, how difficult it is for students once they are expelled to ever get back into school, for kids who have served their time and then they're not allowed to be reinstated. If you don't have an IEP, if you're not in special education, then once you're expelled, you may not get an education unless someone takes mercy on you and lets you into their school.
So there aren't necessarily educational options once a student is suspended or expelled. Is that's one of your major concerns here?
That is one of my major concerns, and I think now, I mean, this law wasn't written when there was online schools. I don't think online schools are the best option for a lot of students. A lot of these students need more support. However, in the very least, it would be lovely if school districts would at least provide online schooling options. Again, I don't think that's ideal, but it's certainly better than nothing. But we really hope we can keep kids in school in a supportive environment, maybe in an alternative setting if that's what they need. But students need, one of the things that always strikes me when I talk to kids when they've been out for even 2 or 3 weeks is how profoundly lonely they feel and isolated and sad and depressed. It's really heartbreaking.
You alluded to a reform, a trend toward reforming these zero tolerance policies in other states. Is there a consensus view now, in your opinion, that zero tolerance absolutely needs to be reformed? Is that a consensus view, or are you encountering much resistance to this idea?
I think that there's a growing consensus, and I think we're often talking about the same things, but there's, I think people misunderstand what we're saying, that we feel like that students shouldn't be held accountable for their actions, and I think that our greatest duty as adults is to hold kids accountable and to help them learn. I just don't think that excluding them from a learning environment actually helps them learn anything. It doesn't help them really repair harm. It just excludes them. So we really need ways like restorative practices to really hold kids to a high level of accountability and to really help them learn from their mistakes. And should they be in school if they brought a gun to school? No, they probably need to be in a different environment, and that's what the federal law says. And so, you know, we do say align with what the federal law is. Don't go way beyond that. So I think that there is some consensus that we shouldn't have as much, we shouldn't have suspensions for silly reasons. We shouldn't exclude for nonviolent offenses. But I think this is really hard. Our school districts aren't, in my opinion, funded as much as they should be. They're funded inadequately, and I think they feel... I've been working in education for working with schools for many, many years, and I feel like I just see so much stress and our very awesome teachers in the school districts. And so this is hard stuff. We're asking them to really try hard and try different things with these students, and that's hard work. And
oh,
I just want to recognize
doubt.
That.
Without a doubt. Perry Stone Palmquist is our guest. Perry's the executive director of the Student Advocacy Center of Michigan, and she is an advocate of reforming Michigan's zero-tolerance discipline policies in schools. You alluded earlier to no appeals. There is nothing resembling an appeals process in play right now?
Right. So, if it's a suspension, usually most school districts will have a way to appeal that. But if it's an expulsion, the board has made a decision to expel, there's nothing in the state law that requires an appeal to a higher process. And so if you have a situation where a school district just decides to expel a kid for 180 days, they don't have any recourse. And we're taking away an entire year of a child's education. There should be another level to sit down and say, wait, was there another way to handle this? Is this really what was required? So I find that very concerning.
And what impact does the zero tolerance policy have on student behavior in the classroom?
Well, we talk to students all the time, and I think it doesn't... Kids act good when they feel good. I believe that as a parent. I believe that as an advocate. And so if you're creating a culture where kids feel like they're not wanted and they're excluded, that doesn't promote the kind of behavior you want. So you want to actually have kids in. You want to listen to them. You want to empower them. You want to teach them the skills. You want to model the skills that you want. That creates the kind of environment that's going to create change, not just kicking kids out. And it's complicated, but that's quickly what I think.
How much attention is being focused on alternatives here? I mean, could you give us an example when a more flexible policy might have served students better?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of interest in that. We're hearing a lot of school districts feel challenged, however, by being able to fund those reforms. But, Ypsilanti Community Schools, where our office is located, has been trying really hard this year to start to implement restorative justice in their school and handling things differently. So that school district's made a commitment to not expel unless it's a mandatory reason. And so we've worked with them this year. There's been cases where in the past they might have expelled a kid for this or that, and they're really working to give those kids another chance, to bring them into a circle, to talk to the people that they harmed so that they can repair the harm. It's hard work, and it's a process still, but they are doing that in cases where they could have just said, see ya. And we've had situations where a kid maybe in Ipsy was allowed to go back, and they're really doing great. Their grades are up. They're doing fantastic. Then I've seen kids who've done the exact same thing in other districts, and they're kicked out and struggling and trying to figure out where they're going to go to school, or if they are in school, it's like in an alternative online kind of situation, and they're not doing as well. So we definitely see the difference it can make.
So restorative, a lot of these measures you're proposing are collectively known as restorative justice, and this involves a process of repairing damage that has been done.
Correct. So it's not a program like some people think. It's just a way of approaching wrongdoing. You can do it in your home. I do it with my own kids. You can do it in your school. People, there's a peacemaking court in Washtenaw County that's starting. It can be done with offenders. And it can be very informal practices all the way to really formal restorative conference. It's a whole set of practices and approaches.
Are you changing people's minds?
I hope so. I've been working on this issue personally for over 10 years, 14 years, gosh, I think. And so people who know me know how passionate I am. I go to disciplinary hearings on a weekly basis, and I see how damaging and heart-wrenching it is for the parents and for the kids. The kids that I work with, these aren't dangerous kids like what is being painted. They're kids who are willing to take responsibility. They're willing to repair the harm that they did when given another chance.
So you're convinced that a restorative justice approach for a good deal of these expelled students would not sacrifice safety?
Absolutely not. I have kids in the school. I want the schools to be safe. Absolutely, we all do.
These discipline policies were created in the hope of promoting safety, mm-hmm. but scaling back safety, you say, is not a great concern. The State Board of Education has recommended the state and districts consider different disciplinary approaches. What are the next steps to making changes to this policy a reality?
Well, I think I believe that we need to have change in the state discipline code. I think it really ties the hands of school districts. I've seen school boards with my own eyes really grappling, and like they didn't really want to have to expel the student. They thought maybe a different kind of punishment would have been more appropriate, but they had to because they have to follow state law. And so that I've seen that struggle of school boards myself. So I think giving school boards some more discretion. And the only way to do that is to change state law. So that's part of it. And then part of it is just giving school districts the resources and tools they need to be able to implement these different ways of doing things, and just knowing, everyone knowing that it takes time to do that. Discipline's very personal. It's right in your face. There's a kid yelling at you. How are you going to handle it? This is very personal, difficult stuff that requires a lot of self-control and resources and support to make a difference. So there's the kind of the macro, and then there's the everyday in the moment. Can you tell that I have a lot of family members who are teachers? So they remind me every day of how hard it is.
From your encounters, Perry, with local administrators and with specifically with classroom teachers on the ground, I mean, can you generalize and say, yeah, this very important group is interested in reform?
I think, I mean, I've had a lot of conversations this year in particular with IPSE, just because that's where we're at, and I hear from teachers and school staff like, oh, we're so glad to have these tools now. They never say it's easy, but they do say that they're happy to have these different set of tools in their toolbox to help work with kids. So I think, you know, discipline is hard, and I don't think in general it's effectively always taught for teachers, new teachers coming in. At least that's what they tell me. I don't know. I didn't go to school to do that, but that they feel like that they wish that they had other ways of doing it. So I think that there is growing interest in different ways to really teach kids in the long term. Because if you've really taught a kid, they're not going to do this stupid thing again, hopefully. Or there'll be a minority that do, but you're really solving the problem in the long term, hopefully.
We'll keep an eye on it. It's a interesting and challenging topic. Perry Stone Palmquist is the executive director of the Student Advocacy Center of Michigan. Thank you, Perry.
Thank you so much.